In a world that's perfect, lies a perfect little town where one team stands alone. But now, something's stirring that will change this place forever.
Perfectville. Welcome to Perfectville, your first place podcast for your Miami Dolphins, now part of the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. I am Sam Marcoux, and he is the returning two-time, yes, two-time Hall of Famer, Mr. Christopher Colon. Chris, welcome back. How the hell are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm good, buddy. Being a Hall of Famer's got its perks. I get to upsize my drink at certain fast food locations for a quarter. Just a couple of whistles here or there along the side street, like a cat call. Everybody recognizes a Hall of Famer, especially a double O Hall of Famer, double O H-O-V, H-O-F.
Yeah, H-O-V.
I'm not a double Hall of Famer in abbreviations at all.
H-O-V, you're a double high occupancy vehicle lane. That's good. You're... But that's part of being in
the,
you know what?
If I put my second jacket on the passenger seat, maybe they won't pull me over.
Well, that's just what it is. I mean, I think you're onto something. I think if you're a two-time Hall of Famer, you do just get to ride in the carpool lane, even if you're by yourself. You know, that's part
of the
perks. You're absolutely right. So, well, welcome back. You didn't miss much in the absence of last week. We did a very special episode with Kabir Kabizi Singh, Seattle Seahawks fan, stand-up comedy extraordinaire. He fits just right in with you and I, Chris, in that he butchered literally every single name that came out of his mouth. I was just like, I don't know who Kenny Skills is. I don't know who J was. Apparently, Chris Ivory is still on the New York Jets, and he's very happy that Landry Jones is no longer on the Miami Dolphins, Chris. So,
listening to that, I feel like he fired up a old video game of Madden to check the rosters to seem relevant, and it was like Madden 2011. And he put it in and just like, oh yeah, Chris Ivory, let me just remember that, and I'll drop that in the conversation. So it seems like I'm into the league right now. Kenny Skills, that killed me. That was hilarious.
Well, the thing is, like, Kabir actually watches a ton of sports. I mean, the guy gambles on WNBA games, and I'm not even kidding. The guy just watches. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, yeah, the Minnesota Lynx look good. He's like, do you know something? I'll call my bookie right now. And I'm like, no. But he watches a ton of sports, and that's all we talk about. But this was at the end of the night. We had been drinking a little bit. This is the same guy who I've been one of his best friends for the last 5 years. I toured with the guy. He called me Max for the first 2 years of the 5 years that we've known each other because he just didn't remember my name. And he goes, I don't know, he looks like a Max. And I was too scared to tell him because I didn't want to get fired from the tour, that I just went by Max. So now everyone calls me Max in the comedy circuit just because of this. The guy's terrible with names, but you know what? I'm terrible with names and you're terrible with names. So like I said, he fit in just quite perfectly in Perfectville here. So he is now an honorary citizen. But speaking of citizens, Chris, as always, the citizens of Perfectville, I maintain we have the best listenership on this show of any podcast, of any radio station, anything that's out there. We just keep getting more and more people telling us about the show and how much they love it. So as always, if you look on Apple Podcasts, you can type in Perfectville, you can type in Miami Dolphins. But if you go there and you are a listener of Perfectville and you give us a 5-star rating and a review, you qualify for an Aronde Baxton, our official merch. It's a sip sack koozie. It's a brown paper bag that's insulated that you can stick your drinks in and keep them cool and prevent your hand from getting frosty hands, which is a campaign that we have helped almost completely wipe off the planet Earth in the last year and a half. I'm very proud of that. But we got a couple more here, Chris. One of them comes from a guy named Tim York One, which if it was Tom York, that would be the lead singer of Radiohead, and I'd be super ecstatic that that guy listened to our show. But instead, it's Tim York, his less talented, less musician inclined brother, apparently. But he did give us a 5-star rating and a review, so we love him. He says, outstanding podcast. Listen to this podcast for the first time today, and I do believe I found my new favorite. Definitely a subscriber for the long term from Missouri. Cheers, guys. McDolphin. That's his dolphin handle, I guess, online. McDolphin. So Tim York, thank you very much. Tim York One, I should say, or as
his alter ego.
Yeah, he's like McLovin, but for the Dolphins out there. So he's McDolphin.
One name? What do you seal?
Yeah, God, exactly. McDolphin. And then this one comes from, speaking of names, this is a name. This comes from the Daddy Ferrari, Chris. the Daddy Ferrari. and he says, best guys doing Finn's fun. And you're going to love this. Just recently found you guys, but have listened to nearly half of your episodes.
Holy shit.
Long commute. Keep it up. Love your chemistry and attitudes. Go Finn's. Half, Chris. Now, we are currently recording
50-something episodes. Yeah.
I mean, we're not good at math, but we know that we've done 109 of these things. So if he's listened to about half of these, I mean, it took us 2 years to get to 109. It took him about 2 weeks to get through half. That is incredible.
Hey, if he's out driving his amazing Ferrari around, just show it off. He has a lot of time to listen to podcasts. So I give the daddy Ferrari a lot of props. And there's nothing cooler than that. Somebody just finding the show and just like binge listening to episodes. I would actually, I don't know if I ever have the time. I don't have a Ferrari. I have a third row Dodge Journey. Watch out, motherfuckers. but if you're driving around, I mean, I would like to do that. I can imagine him listening, and the quality of our show just was absolutely trash can in the beginning.
I was
and
just then, thinking that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then to hear like the progression of these episodes, and it's almost like, holy shit, it was so bad before. And now here we are. So that's awesome, man. That's two new listeners in a row. That's pretty badass.
Yeah, that's kind of weird though. Like to think about, like, oh, I heard an episode I liked it. I'll go back and listen to all of them. And then like they listen to the first ones, and we're just a couple of mental patients with me recording out of my garage. And I think you were in like your bedroom in the bed, you know, recording into a gamer mic. It was just awful the way we started. So if you're gonna listen to half, may I suggest the last 50 instead of the first 50? Right. I think you would be much better off.
You know, I wonder if he sat there and it's like one of those things when I rewatch Game of Thrones, I'm like, oh, that's a three-eyed raven, you know, something crazy like that, and you like know what happened, so you kind of pick up on a couple of things. I wonder if he heard your whole rant about how the Jarvis Landry relationship is going to end, and it's going to end ugly, if he was just like, motherfucker, he called that.
I called that 2 years in advance. That's me knowing stuff. Well, Chris, I'm also wondering if you listened to the first episodes, how many promises that I made to the audience, the citizens of Perfect Will over the years for like different types of merchandise and parties and stuff that we were going to do that I never did. So
he's like, cool, they have shirts and keychains. Yeah. Let me go look at their store. Oh, it's still the koozie they're giving away for free.
Where's this Finalysis podcast with Travis Wingfield that he keeps talking about?
Who the fuck is Kevin Dern?
Who is Kevin Dern? Who are all these people that they're talking about? I only hear Sam and Chris. I'm going to do that one day. When I don't have anything else to do, I'm just going to go back and listen to a random episode and cringe the entire time. I think that
exactly.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Your school pictures from the mid-90s. You're just like, oh my God, is that a mullet and plaid? Good Lord.
Yeah. No, I think I'd rather do that than go back and listen to the very start of the show, with all due respect to both you and I. But anyway, with all due respect to everyone here, we do have to get the show started, and this is a different one, Chris. This is something new that I just popped into my head last night, and I decided to throw it out there. This is Citizen's Choice. As you guys know, we do a coin toss here at the beginning of the show. Chris takes a topic, I take a topic, we flip a coin just like they do in football. Whatever Chris calls in the air, if he wins, he gets to choose whether he wants to go first or second, and then we talk about it in the first half and the second half of the show. Along the way, we have all kinds of fun things to do. And then we also have something called Three and Out at the end of the show, where we talk about topics outside of the Miami Dolphins, but related to football or sports in general. We had so many requests, Chris, from the citizens that I think for this episode and this episode only, for Three and Out, we're going to take three of the suggestions where maybe we don't have a full half to discuss and throw those in there as well. So this recording here, this is very much the citizen show, if you want to call it that. So, Chris, you've looked at the topics. I've looked at the topics. What is your topic that you are bringing to the coin toss right here, right now, from the citizens?
Well, considering I'm pretty active on Reddit, and our subreddit has made us official talking heads over there on the Miami Dolphins page, I have to go with the top comment that was voted, and that was Slainers, a friend of ours, actually the host and co-creator of Fins Up Fans Down, also a part of the Dolphins Talk podcast network. And that is actually not a biased thing. I just wanted to go with the top comment, and he was voted that way. That's your fault, not mine. But I like it. He said we're in the beginning of the season. Week one is still in the horizon in front of us, and we always hear the cookie cutters and how excited we are and what's going on. He wants to hear some pessimism. He wants to hear what we think might go wrong, what issues could be occurring, and things that we can maybe try to predict, which, as always, as Dolphins fans, the inevitable happens, and something bad happens. So I'm going to go ahead and use that as my topic for the coin toss.
Well, that's a good one, Chris. And shout out to Reddit and Slainer and the Fins Up Fans Down podcast. As you mentioned, part of the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. I'm actually going to go to one of our other social medias, in this case, onto Twitter, where you can follow us at Perfectville Pod. And I'm going to go to a longtime listener whose handle is at TanaDaddy69. So not only do we have the Ferrari daddy, but we also have TanaDaddy69.
I'm excited that Ryan Tannehill's dad is listening to our show.
It is. If we can get Ryan Tannehill to listen and be a guest, if his dad will actually recommend this, that would be something else.
His name is Copper Tannehill.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's stupid. It'd be great if everyone in Ryan's name is just named after a different element on the periodic table, like steel, copper, gold, silver, bronze. Just like how everyone in your family's named after Christopher Lloyd characters from Back to the Future.
Wow.
And all those other movies.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it'd be great if there's just a theme, you know. But anyway, TanaDaddy69 wants to know what, in our opinion, is our four toughest games. Ooh. So I think both of these topics jive well together, Chris. You're going to talk about all things to be pessimistic about for the Miami Dolphins in 2018, and we're also going to talk about the four toughest games that we think, looking at the schedule. And I'm going to throw a wrinkle in there. This didn't come from Tana Daddy. This comes from Sammy Daddy. And that is, I'm going to say the four toughest games outside of our division. So no Patriots, no Jets, no Bills. So looking at the rest of the schedule, what are our four toughest games? Because you could just kick two of those out right now with the New England Patriots, and that's obvious. But I want to know, based on the rest of the schedule, what you think the toughest games are and what the toughest games I think they're going to be. And looking at this, this quarter, Chris, for the coin toss for both topics, this is 2015. So this is a relatively new quarter. This is one of those new quarters, Chris, that actually has different states on the back. Care to guess the state that's on the back of this 2015 quarter?
Well, I'll be random as shit and say Idaho.
You are Idaho, but this is actually from your great home state of North Carolina. So I have a North Carolinian.
That is not my home state.
Oh, are we? You've been there like for the last 15 years, Chris.
12, but yeah, I'm 31, so still Florida overrules, and I was born there, so that gives you like an extra 3-year cushion. I'll go ahead and call that.
You're a kiss ass, just like Kabir, and trying to get people to just love you for all of this. But in 2015, as you might remember, Chris, this is a good year. Now we went 6-10 and finished last, so I don't know if you can consider it a good year overall. But there was a lot of positives that came out of this year. Can you name one positive that happened in the 2015 season?
Joe Philbin got fired.
Joe Philbin did get fired after we started 1-3. That is correct. That is one of the positives. Can you name another one?
Dan Campbell kicked some ass for 2 weeks against Tennessee and Houston.
Well, there it is. That's what I was really looking for, is that this is the year that Dan Campbell ripped the humongous gorilla off of our back. And what I mean by that is this is the only time out of about a dozen tries, both preseason and regular season, that the Miami Dolphins have ever beaten the Houston Texans. And that is in large part due to Dan Campbell yelling, screaming, doing Oklahoma drills, punching people in the face until we got our shit together for two games in a row against the Tennessee Titans, ironically our first opponent this season in 2018, and the Houston Texans. So
Dan Campbell kicking the offensive line meeting door open in the middle of a meeting and just punching Dallas Thomas in the face and just leaving. Just yelling. He's like, whoa! And everyone's like, what the fuck? He just kicks the door in, throws a quick 9-12, it's a fucking 12-6 elbow on Dallas Thomas's eyebrow, fucking flipping him off, and he has a huge thing of chew in his mouth, and he just walks out, and everybody's like, man, I fucking love playing for that guy. He's such a player's coach.
Yeah, and he inspired people too. So he would go in and he would just uppercut Dallas Thomas, and then Jamil Douglas got up and ran over and tried to do the same thing, but completely missed and then fell over, and then everyone on defense just stepped over him and walked over and hit Ryan Tannehill right in the face
while getting like his catering.
Yeah, that actually this year was the year that we drafted Devontae Parker in the first round as well. So speaking of pessimistic things, it's appropriate that we flip this coin right here, right now, Chris. As always, feel free to call it in the air. I am flipping it now.
Tails.
Oh, it bounced and landed on top of my phone, and it is, in fact, tails. So you get the honor, sir, if you want to go first or second with your topic.
I will go first.
All right, Chris will go first, which makes sense, especially in a podcast format. Why would you not want to go first? So we are going to talk about all things to be pessimistic about for the Miami Dolphins in 2018. Now, this came from, as you'd mentioned, Slainer from Reddit. Now, it's funny about this is I read that same comment, Chris, and he talked about, well, this time of year, everyone's talking about be, you know, optimistic and all the hope. We want to hear the other side. And I'm thinking, just listen to all 109 episodes of Perfectville. I'm pretty sure we are the other side
right now.
Yeah, or just, yeah, exactly. Turn on ESPN if you want to hear the pessimism when it comes to the Miami Dolphins, or read anything online. There's a lot of pessimism, you know, surrounding this team. Where do you start, Chris? I mean, let's look at this not only from, you know, talent acquisition and talent leaving standpoint, but we've seen two preseason games. So we've seen a little bit of this team in action. We've seen training camp. What, based on what you've seen so far, is something that has got you worried? What's something that you are pessimistic about for the Miami Dolphins going into this season?
Well, and I think it's hard to admit, even for me, because I'm watching Hard Knocks, and I'm really being pessimistic towards Jarvis Landry. But I'm going to call it right now that we're going to really miss his fire. Like, we're going to miss that guy on the field fighting for his teammates, getting in people's faces, fighting for yards. So far in preseason, it just seems like the other receivers are going through the motions. Devontae Parker, of course, is just, you know, ordering a pretzel in the stands. He's not even playing. But even with Kenny Stills, Albert Wilson kind of shows a little fire. He catches the ball, gets a first down, kind of does the first down motion, kind of your bare minimum for a you know, athletic receiver that you want to see. Danny Amendola literally catches the ball, stands up, and shakes the hand of the cornerback every time and goes back to the huddle. but Jarvis Landry, man, like, I know he's a douchebag. I know he's a dick. And I know watching Hard Knocks, he seems like he's all about his brand and he's trying to, you know, he said, I think the last episode literally I watched last night, he said he doesn't care if everybody hates me. He doesn't want anybody to like me. No one's going to push me around. And that's like one of those things we talked about with Ndamukong Suh, like, where you hate him if he's not on your team. But if he's on your team, you're like, fuck yeah, I love that guy. I think we're going to miss that. I don't see anybody so far on this team in the preseason, at least in the two games, and then the people that have been on our team previously, that's going to put their shoulder down and really fight for yards, get up in somebody's face. Yeah, we don't want to see penalties all the time, but every once in a while, I remember coaching with a guy maybe 3 years ago. He told his son, he was at nose guard, the first play of the game, he wanted him to grab the center's face mask and rip him to the ground and get a penalty. He wanted him to do it to set the tone. And the kid was just like, you're fucking crazy, Dad. I'm nine. But yeah, which is fucking nuts. But I would never coach anybody to do that. But that's the kind of thing and mentality, though, that a lot of people kind of drive towards, you know, teammates, fans, even the other opponents. You get in their head immediately and you're just telling them, I'm going to beat you all day. And I don't care if you know it. Jarvis Landry is the type that would line up and say, hey, I'm about to run a slant. I don't care if you know it. You're not going to be able to cover me. And he'd still catch the ball. He'd get up. He said, here you go. And he'd flip the ball at him and, you know, be a douche or whatever. But I think we're going to miss that fire this year. I don't see it yet. Maybe a Kenny and Drake will step up. I don't know. But I got a list of a couple other things, and I'll kind of fire through them, Sam. But I think we're going to miss Jarvis Landry's fire. I think we're going to have some growing pains. I'm going to be a little pessimistic here. We're growing pains. There's a lot of young guys we're counting on. Minka Fitzpatrick, Gesicki, Drake only in like his second and a half year of starting. There's a lot of young guys that we're really counting on to come through. Albert Wilson's still a young fellow. McMillan, Baker on the defensive line. Godchall and Taylor now are the number ones and twos so far as far as defensive line. Charles Harris in year two, we really need to step up. There's a lot of young guys, even with Tankersley over the other side of Xavier Howard, who went from being starter and everybody's best friend to we don't even know what the hell we're doing over there at number two at corner. So there's a lot of young guys that we're going to count on and need to make big plays that are going to have some growing pains this year, guys. You have to be ready for it. There's going to be some bad games, possibly losses as a result of those bad games, and it's going to happen. Also, Sam, on the other side of that, we got veterans, man, some older veterans. Sometimes I watch highlights and I realize how long Rashad Jones has been playing for us. Cam Wake, obviously, has been playing for us for a long time. We have Hayes and Branch and Quinn, who looked amazing in preseason, so I'm not going to – but I mean, you got Alonzo and these older offensive linemen and things like that. Frank Gore, you know, we're counting on a lot of older guys too. It's such a weird dynamic. Somebody asked on Reddit, what's our identity next year? And it's so tough to pinpoint that. Like, we don't know, because are the young guys going to step up and take over? Are the old guys going to fizzle out? Are we going to still keep counting on half of the team being older and hope that we just have this perfect mesh of young guys, old veterans that can come together and be a successful team? We don't know. And without that answer being out there, you got to expect some bad things to happen, either mistakes from the young guys, old guys maybe giving up, giving in. They're too tired. They don't want to do it. It's not worth their time. There's a lot of things going on. I already mentioned number two, the corner, so the second corner. And, of course, we're the Miami Dolphins, Sam. So I'm going to be pessimistic and say we're going to probably win a couple of games that we shouldn't have won, but we're going to lose some games we should win. And that's the constant with this team.
So we should just quit now. That's the most depressing thing I've ever heard.
I mean, sorry. Slainer, you asked for this, motherfucker.
Yeah, I didn't ask for you to be pessimistic. Slainer did. The citizens wanted some rain on their sunny town of Perfectville. But you're right. I mean, I can't disagree with really anything that you just said there. I mean, and it's not just Jarvis Landry when it comes to that emotional boost that you might get. I mean, let's not discount what Michael Thomas brought to this team. I mean, Michael Thomas was a special teams extraordinaire. Michael Thomas was a guy that when he had to play defense, did the best he absolutely could. And Michael Thomas is no longer on this team. I believe he's with the New York Giants, if I'm not mistaken. And he was a fiery character as well, and he's gone. So you have kind of a double whammy when it comes to that, you know, in-game motivation, and somebody's going to have to step up and take that place, be it Albert Wilson or be it a veteran who decides that, you know what, this is my time to actually be more vocal. Personally, I think it has to come from Ryan Tannehill, and I think we're starting to see that just a little bit. You know, it starts with him throwing everybody out of the huddle and you know, in a positive way versus telling people a couple years ago, have fun on the practice squad after they picked him off for like the seventh time in practice. So, you know, maybe his leadership
move.
What a terrible thing to do. And I remember chastising him at the time, like, well, yeah, what a terrible thing to do. And you know, his leadership is starting to step up a little bit. But I agree. I think we're going to need to find that fire from somebody else, because Jarvis Landry, like him or hate him at this point, that's what he brought to this team. And I think people fed off that. And if we don't have that and things start to go negatively, maybe we just can't get out of it. Maybe we can't, you know, spiral out of that.
And Sue on defense too. Like, we're losing two fiery guys. I mean, Sue literally almost chokeslammed a la Undertaker Joe Flacco last year. So, or I'm sorry, Ryan Mallett last year. We lost both of those guys. Both of those guys, you hate them if they're not in your team. You love them when they are. We lost a lot of fire this year.
We did, and here's the thing. Speaking of Ndamukong Suh, and he took a lot of flack this week, or while we took a lot of flack in the last week, of him mocking the defensive tackles and the defensive line for the Miami Dolphins after Christian McCaffrey broke free for like a 300-yard running touchdown, something along those lines. And he just said, right up the gut, LOL, on Instagram as one of his comments. And that's one of the things I'm actually starting to become pessimistic about. I'm usually not pessimistic when it comes to the defensive line play for the Miami Dolphins. As I've said in the past, there seems to always be somebody who will step up and be that person that steps in and takes over as the leader, whether it's Larry Chester and Tim Bowens from yesteryear, or Daryl Gardner or Ndamukong Suh or any of these other folks over the years. I'm not seeing it right now. And I know it's only two games into preseason, but that's one area where I think if I'm an offensive coordinator or somebody who's calling plays against the Miami Dolphins, I'm turning around and handing that ball off to the running back and saying, go get your 4, 5, 6 yards until they can stop you. That's an area of big concern for me, which is interesting because right now the two areas on defense that you and I are pessimistic about are the defensive line and the defensive backs. Coming into the season, if you had asked me 2-3 weeks ago what I'd be most concerned about, it would have been the linebackers, just because we haven't had good linebacking play in a very, very long time, at least not consistently. But that's now number three on our priority list from the three different areas of defense, as far as I can tell. And that says a whole lot of something, because I don't have a ton of confidence in the linebacking core yet. I mean, there's some flashes out there that I think are good, but right now, that's number three behind the defensive line and as you'd put it, the defensive back play, especially at the number two cornerback. So this defense has a chance to be scary in a bad way, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. And Matt Burke seemed to be a little bit more aggressive in the preseason games, a lot of blitzing and things like that. But if you still can't get to the quarterback, you're doing nothing but hurting yourself. So he's got to be a little bit more creative, think of things, strategize with the players he has. I noticed Jerome Baker got a lot of work with the ones last preseason game of the Panthers, and he did fairly well. a guy that's not helping himself, especially with Minka Fitzpatrick right on his heels, is TJ McDonald. He took an absolute horrendous angle on that Christian McCaffrey 300-yard run, you said, where he got just completely sucked inside. There's no reason to do that. You're a safety. You're the last chance hope of your defense. There's no reason to be super uber aggressive, to come downhill in the middle on a fast guy like that, a shifty, small, fast guy, and get sucked inside and take a bad angle and give him the entire outside to run. So TJ McDaniel on the hot seat as well, because Minka Fitzpatrick, they're saying, I think Adam Gase had a quote today, that his coming in as a rookie is unprecedented. Like, he used a word, something like that, along the lines of unprecedented, where it's unnatural. It's odd how amazingly well he's doing, that he's been close to perfect. And that is just fucking unbelievable coming from Adam Gase, especially. So Minka Fitzpatrick's right there. I mean, they might even put him at the number two corner and put McDonald or put McCain. I was on Dolphins Talk podcast. And he had mentioned putting McCain as the outside guy and putting Minka in the slot. You know, use your best guys to your advantage. Who cares what position it is? Just go cover a guy.
Yeah, that might be what we have to do, just to, you know, put a Band-Aid on a bullet hole until we can figure this out. And I think you said McDaniel. I believe TJ McDonald is his name.
Yes.
Either way, he's McSucky right now. So we're going to need him to play a little bit better. He is big, though, man. I was watching him on the Panthers game, and he was standing next to one of our linebackers. I cannot remember which linebacker it was. And I had to do a double take and go, wait, which one is the linebacker and which one is the safety? Because they were almost identical in size. Maybe he's just out of position and he needs to bulk up and put another 5 to 10 pounds and just move down a little bit. Maybe that would be better for him long term. I'm not sure. Other things to be pessimistic about, Chris, at least as far as I can tell, I'm not 100% sold on this coaching staff. We've seen some changes. I think some of the changes that we've seen were reactionary by Adam Gase to a very bad season last year. And the season was 6-10 and a disappointment. But I think that happened because we didn't have Ryan Tannehill and we had Jay Cutler. And I think some of the changes that he made, and now granted, the offensive line had to change due to drugs. But some of the other changes that he's brought in, he started to bring in his own guys, which can be good or bad.
Right,
right now, I'm somewhat pessimistic about it. I feel like this coaching staff isn't exactly tested. They don't have a long track record, and that goes for the defensive coordinator, that goes for the new offensive coordinator, and quite frankly, that goes for our 500 winning percentage coach in Adam Gase. So right now, until further notice, I'm going to say that I am a little bit negative when it comes to this coaching staff in general. I like our front office. I do, maybe with the exception of Mike Tannenbaum. I like Chris Greer. I like Stephen Ross. I'm not sure if I'm 100% sold on Adam Gase, Matt Burke, and Lowell Dowell Logans, or whatever the hell our offensive
weirdest
coordinator's name is.
They just give us the weirdest names on this show.
Yeah.
Help us
out. I don't know why. Again, can we not have a John Smith? I mean, where's Mike Smith these days? Is he with Jacksonville? Can we just go bring him over here for a season so I can have a Mike Smith? No. But that's an area of pessimism for me, is I really do think we're going to maybe lose a game or two because of coaching decisions.
I can see that totally. Adam Gase is one of those guys that's very stubborn. He comes from Nick Saban branch of coaching, and we've seen it already where he'll get rid of guys, sure, but he'll also make the decisions to stick with them and back his guys. And that's, like you said, like, that's fine if you're bringing in guys that are successful, but if you're bringing in guys like a Dole Loggins or whatever the hell his name is, that really Bears fans were happy to get rid of, and you're going to bring them in here, and then all of a sudden the offense may be more of the same because he's aligned his thought process with Adam Gase. It's a catch-22. It's a very thin line because you're watching Hard Knocks and Hugh Jackson, and he has these former head coaches as his coordinators, and they're kind of bucking them, and you can tell in the body language and what they're saying that they're not maybe agreeing with some of his decisions and things like that. So that's hurting their team, and it's going to hurt them in the long run. And that you've seen coaches bring in guys that are just yes men and agree with everything you say, and that hurts them as well. So hopefully this guy and these guys that he's bringing in will kind of call him out, question some of his decisions, and give him a second set of eyes that can help him in the long run.
Yeah, and if not, then maybe we can get Kenny Loggins to be our offensive coordinator, because at least I can
highway
say his
the
name.
Danger and, zone.
And maybe that's what we need. We need a highway to the danger zone, because right now we are not in the danger zone, because when we get in the danger zone, especially from what I've seen so far in the first two preseason games, we might as well just kick a field goal on second down, because there's no way. Why are we wasting time? We're going to need all the points we can get. And if we can kick it on second down versus fourth down, because we know we're not getting a touchdown, might as well just go ahead and kick it, because it's not the red zone. It is the danger zone. That's another reason reason to be pessimistic. I read some articles on Kenyon Drake, Chris, which are very depressing. He's actually ranked very, very low in terms of starting running backs when it comes to converting red zone opportunities into touchdowns. He's very much a boom or a bust. And as much as I like Kenyon Drake, and I think he is underrated, it has shown in both regular season and preseason games that this guy just doesn't seem to have the knack to punch it in from about 1, 2, 3 yards out. And maybe Frank Gore is the solution right to that, or maybe somebody else is, or maybe it's, you know, that's where Mike Gesicki is really going to start earning his money as a rookie, is that maybe that's what will supplement that. But Kenyon Drake needs to be better in terms of getting the ball into the end zone from a short distance away. And that's an area where I'm pessimistic, is that if we get into first and goal from 5 yards out, I feel like we're going to kick a field goal more often than we score a touchdown.
Yeah, red zone offense in the preseason has looked suspect, but I agree and believe Adam Gase when he says he's being a lot to be desired because he's trying different things. We haven't seen Gesicki really in there. He had a lot of work with Ryan Tannehill today at practice in the red zone, so hopefully he's holding things back and not giving anything away. I wonder if there's going to be a big showing on the week 3 preseason.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That's Chris Cullen being pessimistic. That's Sam Marcoux being pessimistic. Slaner, I hope that did you well over on Reddit. You can check Slaner and his co-host up on Fins Up, Fans Down, part of the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. That is your first half of Perfectville. We're going to go to halftime, and then after halftime, we will talk about what I wanted to talk about. Well, really what our citizens on Twitter wanted to talk about, which is the 4 hardest games on the Miami Dolphins schedule, not in the AFC East. What's up, citizens of Perfectville? Sam Marcoux here to talk about my bookie. And ever since Chris and I started the town of Perfectville, everyone has been coming to us going, hey guys, you know your stuff about football. Can you give us some advice about gambling? Who should we bet on? Who should we bet against? Should we take the over? Should we take the under? Well, the truth is, I have no clue. I don't know who's going to win. I don't know who's going to lose. I don't know who's going to cover. I don't know who is a mush and who is not. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. And here's why. Who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I tell everyone, bet with MyBookie. Trust me, this is your best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have tremendous reviews online. And their mobile site, easiest to use, bar none. Who doesn't like that? Longevity, high reviews, easy to use. Perfect. Lay down some cash and win big today. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, yeah, you. You can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score in each game. That's like a double fantasy bet right there. You're playing fantasy football, and then you're gambling on the fantasy player. Join now, and MyBookie will match the citizens of Perfectville's first deposit 100% up to $1,000. Do you know what that means? You guys realize? That means if you put $1,000 into your account, MyBookie is going to match that. So you can turn $1,000 into $2,000 just like that in the blink of an eye. Use promo code PERFECTVILLE to activate this offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code PERFECTVILLE when creating your account to claim this bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. Check out MyBookie today. All right, welcome back. The second half of Perfectville. Chris, now this is coming from a Twitter user, as we talked about. TanaDaddy69 wants to know, in our opinion, what are the 4 toughest games on the Miami Dolphins schedule for 2018? And I threw in the wrinkle, the 4 toughest games not from the AFC East. So that eliminates 2 Buffalo Bills, 2 New York Jets, and 2 New England Patriots games from our schedule. Real quick, let's just run down the schedule that we have, the other 10 games. Week 1 versus the Tennessee Titans. Week 3 against the Oakland Raiders. Week 6 at Cincinnati. Then we have Chicago and Detroit back-to-back at home. Then we play Thursday night against the Houston Texans the week after that. 2 weeks after that, we play in Green Bay. Then we have a bye week. Right after that, we are in Indianapolis against our old AFC East rivals, the Colts. Then we play at Minnesota. And then we finish up the non-AFC East games at home against the Jacksonville Jaguars. So those 10 games right there, Chris, which ones do you feel are the 4 hardest for the Miami Dolphins in 2018?
God, that's a tough list. There's a lot of good teams there that are coming in from last season. I'm going to go ahead and say that end game with Jacksonville, a team that went to the AFC Championship that has just a hell of a defense. They might have a lot of things going for them that last game where they're going to have to just play balls to the wall. And a defense like that, two shutdown corners, linebackers in a pass rush. I mean, they are just – they are legitimate. They are really legitimate on defense. Blake Bortles, he's hit or miss, so that could be the only thing that keeps us in the game if our defense helps us out. But Leonard Fournette, you were just talking earlier about our interior defensive line. That guy might eat us for lunch if the possibility is there. So I'm going to go ahead and my first one, I'm going to say Jacksonville.
All right, you got Jacksonville. That is the second to the last game on the season. We do play at Buffalo for the last game of the year, but that Jacksonville game happens on December 23rd. That has the possibility of not only spoiling any maybe playoff dreams for the Miami Dolphins, but it also has a chance of spoiling Christmas for Miami Dolphins and citizens of Perfectville everywhere. It's 2 days before Christmas. And I agree. I think that's going to be a tough game. I think that's a game where we could probably just get spanked on the ground if we cannot figure out how to stop a running back. So I think that's a very good choice. I'm going to go with the Houston Texans on Thursday night for a number of reasons. Number one, we never beat the Houston Texans. We've only beat them once in our entire existence. We have a problem beating the Houston Texans. Number two, it is a road game. Number three, it is on a Thursday night. Talk about being an underdog on the road against Houston on Thursday night. There's a reason why, if you look at that from a gambling standpoint, it is a bad bet if you're going to take a road dog on Thursday night. You're coming off only, what, 3 days of rest from when you played the Detroit Lions right before. Now you're going on the road into a hostile environment against a team that you just don't have a lot of success against. So while you go with the Jacksonville Jaguars, I'm going to go with the Houston Texans. I think that's going to be a tough one for Miami. Plus, recent memory tells me we have not done great in primetime television. This is a primetime game. Everyone's going to be looking at us, and we will probably shit the bed like we have over the last couple of years in primetime.
We suck against Houston. We suck on national TV, and generally, road dogs suck on Thursday night football. That is an absolute loss. There's no way we win that game, Sam. I will go back to this episode and read myself a new one. But unless Deshaun Watson, J.J. Watt, and Jadavious Clowney take a private plane and crash, there's no way we are winning that football game.
And just for the record, we are in no way advocating that they crash.
Yeah, just please don't. I like all those players.
Look, we've gotten very popular over the last couple of weeks here on Perfectville. People are listening to this show. We do not need to be shut down due to a joke. But if they did crash, I would not shed a tear. I'm just saying that right now for the record. All right, Chris, game number three. What else would be a very difficult game for the Miami Dolphins?
I think at Green Bay is the obvious one. I mean, you're in Green Bay, middle of the season. Could be cool. Aaron Rodgers, anytime you're playing Aaron Rodgers, that's a tough one because they just got weapons out the ass. Their defense is good. Being on the road in a odd environment. I mean, we play at Green Bay every 8 years. I actually think I remember hosting a random podcast for Blog Talk Radio the last time we played Green Bay because Steve Sykes, a good buddy, Dr. AstroZoom, actually went to the game and I had him on the show. And he told me how amazing the fans were. They're super nice. They were offering him tailgate food. They knew Dolphins fans weren't enemies. We don't play often, and they're super welcoming. but don't let the kindness be fool you for weakness. The Green Bay Packers are a legitimate football team. They have Aaron Rodgers back. Him being healthy on the road against an NFC North team like that, that is just recipe for disaster for a South Florida team.
One of the last times, I don't know if it was the last time we played them, it might have been because I think it was about 4 years ago, was the game where
Philbin called Aaron that Rogers, timeout at the end and they did a fake spike. Fuck them.
Yeah, they did the fake spike against the Miami Dolphins, which should be outlawed, by the way. That should be a rule. Like, once Dan Marino does that, you should not be allowed to use that. Like, if anybody were to use an offensive line pass like they did against us, against the Jets, like, that should be illegal because that's theirs now. Like, that is their tree that they get to pee on. We get the fake spike, but I digress. But I remember being in a diner after officiating a wedding, long story. Wow. But I was in a diner watching that by myself, and that, you know, we lost that game, and I yelled out the largest, loudest motherfucker of all time, and everyone in that diner turned around and looked at me like it was some sort of weird record scratch. But then they saw that I was wearing Miami Dolphins gear, and they're like, oh, we get it. They're blowing it again. So, yeah, I think that's a very good choice, especially at Green Bay and doing this in November. That has a chance to be a very, very, very cold, bitter game. So I agree with you. I think that's going to be a tough one. So we have the Jaguars. We have the Packers. We have the Texans. I'm really torn between two other games here, Chris. One of them – has us playing the Minnesota Vikings in December. Now, Minnesota is a very, very strong team. They're one of the teams that I think could be the NFC champion and representative in the Super Bowl. But that game is at 1 o'clock, which we like. It's also inside of a dome, so the weather isn't going to be too much of a factor for us. The other game that I'm looking at right now is the very first game, and that would be against the Tennessee Titans at home. I can't remember the last time we started the season at home week one. I have a feeling, this is my feeling, and we'll get to our full season predictions later during the preseason, but I have a feeling that this team is going to start very, very slow, and I have a feeling they're going to gel come October, and we'll see if they can maybe get a playoff run out of themselves later in the year. It kind of depends on how they do, quite frankly, in November and December. I'm going to go with the Tennessee Titans. I think Tennessee is a very underrated game, and they're a very underrated team, I should say, and I think having them come in the first week after, you know, a very tumultuous season for us, having Marcus Mariota, who kind of has a chip on his shoulder when it comes to the Miami Dolphins, I would suspect, for reasons that we've talked about in the past, I think that's going to be a tough game. I really think that's going to be a game that we're going to have to figure out, to your point, how to be emotionally up for 60 minutes. It's easy early, right? It's the first game of the season. Everyone's going to be jacked. You're going to be at home. But at the same time, I could see us starting to lose a little bit of energy and emotion come second quarter, third quarter, especially if they start running the ball on us, if they have the lead and they're just, you know, sitting on it and making our defense have to make a stop, and we don't have a Jarvis Landry or a Michael Thomas or somebody to, you know, raise this team up. I could see this team being very, very difficult to get past week one. So I'm going to go with the Tennessee Titans for game number four. What do you think about that?
That's a great one, because we're in an odd situation where we're trying to host a podcast, and I don't want to say be homered or biased, but we want to see both sides of the coin. So we definitely will make an argument either way. I think that's the best way to have a successful show like this, is to see both sides of the coin. If we were both were just very adamantly for one thing and one thing only, it'd be a very skewed show that only broadened itself to one side of the fan base. So I want to make sure we're back and forth, and that's why we have the shows where you take the bad for Tannehill, I take the good, things like that. It keeps it neutral, and it keeps it fresh and fun. I think our fan base right now is at a point of breaking. There is a lot of fans that are just fed up with anything current. Gase, Tannehill, they just want a clean sweep. They want Stephen Ross to sell the team. They want a new GM. Like, just, they're done. There's a lot of just vitriol, negativity with this fan base, and a lot of them go to home games, and they're season ticket holders and have been. They'll tell you, for 30 years, and I remember the good old days and all that shit. They're just kind of done with it. It's been enough. The early 2000s held them on because we had that great defense and we were still in the hunt. Winning 10, 9, 11 games a year was just the norm. But ever since, you know, the Sperano and things, it's just every year is 8-8, 7-9, 6-10. It's just like the same thing. I can see, to your point, Sam, starting hot, maybe, you know, nice drive on offense, but if it ends on a punt or ends on a missed field goal, the defense gives up a long touchdown, all of a sudden, it's not a bad deal. It's like 14-10, we're losing. The crowd starts turning. Like, I mean, you talk about a home field advantage in September, that should just be a team from the southeast, sort of, kind of Midland there in Tennessee, where it's not going to be as hot. Come September, this should be a total win-win for us. Like, we're coming in, they don't know what to expect from us, a lot of young guys with the heat and all that, and I can just see it crumbling, like you said, where they just start fast, bad things happen, it snowballs, crowd starts turning on us, they're booing, they're chanting for David Fales. I'm sure half of the crowd will do that, and it's going to be a shit show, and I can totally see that being a really tough game.
It really could be. So there you have it, guys. We've got the Tennessee Titans. We've got at Green Bay. We have the Jacksonville Jaguars towards the end of the season. And we also have another game that I already forgot. That's how tough. Oh, the Houston Texans on Thursday night. So there you go. I mean, I like all of those picks. I like the two that you came up with. I obviously like the two that I have. Let us know your four difficult games. Again, outside of the AFC East, you can email us at PerfectvillePodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook, just keyword Perfectville. You can also tweet us at PerfectvillePod. Let us know if we're wrong, or why some of these other matchups might be worse for us than these ones here. Chris Are you ready for the doll fail of the week?
No, but I know you're going to do it, so just do it.
You know why? Because you're not ready, because that's not an actual segment that we have on this show. It is the greatest doll fails in history.
Exactly. I passed your test.
Yes, and this week we are going to 3 seconds ago when I could not remember the only segment that I came up with in the last couple of weeks, and I failed. No, I'm going to go back to the 2000 season, which we've talked about before. As you know, I have become a Jay Fiedler homer over the last, few years. But we're going to go to the Monday Night Massacre, or unless you are not a Miami Doll fan, the Monday Night Miracle. You know exactly where we're going here, Chris. This is, I believe, we were 5-1. We had a 23-point lead in the fourth quarter against the hated New York Jets. And not only did we blow the lead in the fourth quarter, we allowed them to tie the game with about 30 seconds left. The second time they tied it, by the way, when Vinny Testaverde, yes, Vinny Greenballs, drops back and drops in a perfect little 3-yard Jumbo Elliott touchdown. Jumbo Elliott being their fat offensive lineman who bobbled the ball and then eventually caught it while looking at himself on the big screen to tie the game. We go into overtime where we are driving. We're getting ready to set up an Alindo Mare field goal. All we have to do is have Jay Fiedler complete one last pass, and he does exactly that, but he does it to the other team for the third time in the game. The Jets go down. John Hall kicks a game-winning field goal, and the rest, as they say, is history. Let's listen to this bullshit right now.
Second down and goal. Fake to Martin, then a dump, and it is juggled and caught by Jumbo Elliott.
That's up, they had the hands team in.
We have reached the end of regulation. One more first down, and they'll be in field goal range for Marty. And that is pissed off again!
So out of the stadium.
Big third and three. Then he throws. Caught. It is Kermit to the 32-yard line from 40 yards. Good snap. Kick away. Jets win. Just amazing. 40-37 Jets.
So, Chris, this is one of the most painful memories in Miami Dolphins history. I mean, I remember this like it was yesterday. Leslie Shepard had 2 touchdowns and 94 yards receiving. Aronde Gadsden had 120 yards receiving. Jay Fiedler only had 250 yards on the game, most of it to those two wide receivers. He did throw 2 touchdowns, had 3 interceptions. There's absolutely zero reason for us to have lost this game, but somehow we allow Vinny Testaverde to throw it 59 times for 378 yards, 5 touchdowns. He also had 3 picks himself. One of the just biggest disasters of all time, just of all time. I don't even know what to say about it.
If we were a bigger franchise, bigger market, I guess, I don't know, this would be just hailed as the biggest blunder in NFL history, maybe minus the Bills comeback with Frank Reich or whatever the hell his name is. This was just horrible, Sam, and it's one of those things. I was 13 years old. One of my first real memories I'm not even kidding. I think this is the first Dolphins memory of heartbreak. Even the Jaguars loss in the playoffs the year prior, I was 12. Like, I don't really. I mean, I remember it sucking and like my dad being super mad and stuff and embarrassed. But I was like, whatever. I was probably playing halfway through the game. Who knows? Playing video games or something. But this game in particular, I'll never forget, because I never forget my dad making me go to bed before it was over and saying, "Son, we're winning by a billion. Just you'll wake up. You'll wake up and see that we won. There's no point. You got school tomorrow. Go to bed." And I went to bed, and I never will forget waking up reading the Palm Beach Post. And I think the cover was Jason Taylor just like looking up in the sky like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" with Jumbo Fuckface Elliott on the side with his weird ass teeth looking up to the moon after he caught the touchdown. And I closed my eyes and opened them again to reread. I thought I read it wrong. Like, I just had woke up and saw that they won. And it was one of the more serious right now. It's one of the more depressing, absolute horrible feelings I've ever felt in my life, and it was the first of many being a Dolphins fan. And I remember looking at my dad. I'm like, we lost? How did we lose? Like, what happened? Did they start the game over? Like, how did we lose? And then, you know, a couple of years later, you get the sideline video of Jay Fiedler saying something like, no way they can.
This
game's over. Yeah. We won this one. It's in the bag. And with the defense we had, I cannot believe that happened, especially against the Jets. I mean, if that happens against the Bengals or like the 49ers, who gives a shit? The Jets. And it's brought up to this day in arguments and shit talk. And it's just one of the worst fucking games I've ever can remember in my lifetime.
Yeah, I don't know why I decided that this was going to be a good segment for this show. I apologize to all the citizens out there. This is why we're going back to Citizens' Choice, because when it's my choice, apparently, look, man, they wanted us to be pessimistic, so I thought we'd just bring out the most pessimistic thing we've ever been a part of, and that was that Monday night massacre and Jumbo freaking Elliott killing us and Jay Fiedler throwing an interception in the freaking overtime that allows John Hall and the New York Jets to win that game. It hurts my soul just to even talk about it, if you could hear it in my voice there. But anyway, Chris, let's get out of that and let's get into three and out. Are you ready?
So I've never been more ready for this segment in my life.
Well, this segment here is a little bit different than what we've done in the past. We are not talking about anything other than citizens' choices here, Chris. So we've got a few of them here from the Reddit and the Twitter. Why don't you go ahead on first down and pull one of these choices and let's talk about it.
Oh, I got to shout out Biscuitville. Got to shout out my buddy on Reddit that posted that he wants to hear a Biscuitville episode or a mention of it, of course. Every time – they just got a new paint job in the building, by the way, out here in good old Indian Trail, North Carolina. And every time I pass it, I think about that episode. I think about you finding out it was a thing in real life. I have to give it up to Al Pones is how I'll pronounce his name on Reddit. It's A-L-P-W-N-S on Reddit for mentioning. He wants a Biscuitville themed episode. And then, of course, K Frost 95 live from Biscuitville 2, Electric Boogaloo. That is the shit I'm talking about right there. Biscuitville, Sam, new paint job, looks clean, looks good. I've eaten there once. It blew you away when I told you it was an actual fucking place. Yet to be sponsored by them, however. We have tweeted at them a few times. We need to maybe keep this up and maybe get the fans going, too, if they get a big ruckus. Maybe Biscuitville will be the sponsor of Perfectville, and that would be the greatest goddamn day of my life.
You know, as I sit here and I look at my beautiful 5-year-old daughter who just started kindergarten this year, who just started playing ice hockey. Yes, ice hockey. And I look at how smart and funny and how successful she is now and how successful she's going to be in the future. And then I think about how happy I was that I found out about Biscuitville. And all I can think of is that my daughter is the second greatest thing that's ever happened to me behind figuring out that Biscuitville is an actual thing. We are not going to have a Biscuitville themed show until they give us at the very least some free fucking biscuits, though. I mean, come on. We have done more for Biscuitville than Biscuitville has done for Biscuitville. And at this point, if they aren't willing to, you know, give us something for that, then we will never do a Biscuitville themed show.
I don't think they exist in California or Florida, Sam. I wonder if they have a marketer, a marketing person that like looked at their Google trends and they're like, why the fuck is Biscuitville being Googled so much in California and South Florida? Like, this is crazy.
Yeah, they set up their strategy for expansion. Like, look, apparently the best markets are going to be Miami and the San Francisco Bay Area. And then they just start buying up land. And then just nobody shows up.
They're
like, what the fuck, Biscuitville? Screw this. Yeah. We have Kale Town right across the street. Why would we need Biscuitville in California? No, that's a good one. I like that one there. This one comes from Dolphin Drew. First name Dolphin, last name Drew. It says, talk some shit about the Titans. Get me warmed up for the regular season, please. Well, Chris, look, I'm not even in Titans mode. I'm in Baltimore Ravens mode. But I'll say this about the Tennessee Titans. It's one of the stupidest mascots names in the NFL. The Houston Oilers made sense. The Tennessee Titans, you only did it for the alliteration. You just wanted the TT, which unless you're a big fan of titties, I don't know why you wanted the TT. You guys are terrible. You're from Nashville. Before that, you played in Memphis. Before that, you played in Houston. You guys have an identity crisis. Eddie George sucks. He's slow. He's bald. He has alopecia and doesn't have any eyebrows. That's the best player you ever had. Steve McNair was terrible in the shotgun formation. And
oh, no. I know exactly.
And I'll just leave it at that. Chris, what do you got for the Tennessee Titans if they happen to be listening to this episode of Perfectville right now?
Rashawn Matthews sucks. He couldn't even be a starter on the Miami Dolphins, for Christ's sake, and you're paying him money. Eddie George does suck. Zach Thomas ate him for lunch when they played. And I just realized when you said they only did it for TT that they technically named the team after Dolly Parton.
Tennessee
Dolly Partons. It's just like I hear Sean Connery on Celebrity Jeopardy and Saturday Night Live saying Dolly Parton. So that's them. They are the Dolly Parton's tits.
That was second down, third down, Chris.
All right. Well, third down, I'm going to stick with Reddit. And I'm going to go ahead and go with Prem1X, Prem1X on Reddit. Sam, the Dolphins are winless already. Is it time to start using their Aronde Backs and Kuzi?
Yeah, use it now. What are you doing? Like, you have
who
it. It's
frosty
free.
Hands?
We sent it to you. Yeah, who wants frosty hands? Like I said, we've almost wiped it out. It's like smallpox at this point. It only exists inside of a laboratory, only to be released if somebody were to break in and then just expose it everywhere. You have an insulated SipSack koozie that you can put your soda, your water, your beer, your vodka, your whiskey, anything in. Why would you not be using it, whether they were 19-0 or 0-19, even though they don't play 19 games? Why would you not use that? Yes, use it. Continue to use it. And that actually goes into one of the topics, call it fourth down, if you will. Somebody just wanted us to talk about beer, Chris. Somebody just wanted us to talk about beer. And here's what I would say. If you have a beer, put it inside of your Aronde Bagston head of the SipSack koozie and drink that shit and keep your hands warm and your beer cold. That right there, yes, use it. Absolutely. Now, I will say this. If we do go 0 for a season, not only are we going to have Aronde Bagstons in SipSack form, Chris, I might have insulated paper bags that we can stick over our heads and then just, you know, pull a ripcord and pull it tight until we can't breathe anymore. Because I don't know if I could handle a winless season. I could barely handle 1-15 to the point where the one win is actually my Super Bowl for my era. If we went 0-16, I don't know how I can handle that. So if we went 0-16, I'm giving out big grocery bags that are insulated so we could just pour all the liquor in there like a jungle juice and put a straw on it.
We can. I just thought of something as you said that. It was like an epiphany. We can do a Aronde bag in sleeping bag that also doubles as a body bag.
Ooh, you know what I was thinking? I was actually thinking of getting like a hoodie that said "Welcome to Perfectville" on the front, and then on the hoodie part, you would flip it on, and it would actually be a bag.
There you go. That's great. But the eyes come down over your eyes and shit.
Yeah, and then you would wear Aronde Bagston as a hoodie. Now, I think that's great, but I looked into the pricing for something so specialized, and we're going to have to price this thing at about $4,000 a hoodie. So, get your credit cards out, ladies and gentlemen, kids. Don't ask your parents' permission. Just order, and we'll get that to you as soon as possible. But not today, because today, Chris, it is time for us to vacate Perfectville and get ready for the dress rehearsal against the Baltimore Ravens, Game 3 of preseason, the one that counts, but not really. What are you looking for real quick out of Ryan Tannehill? Are you looking for one quarter, two quarters, three quarters? What amount of playing time would be sufficient against the Baltimore Ravens, Chris?
Well, I'm not worried about the time frame. I've seen him play enough already. He looks like his old self, very efficient, but just, you know, short, quick passes, which that works for the Patriots. So if we can make that work, that's fine. I would like to see him stretch the field a little bit more. He went to Amendola deep in the first game and missed pretty bad. So I would like to see him get a little bit of chemistry with Wilson. And I really want to see Gesicki get some work with Tannehill on the field. The way they practice this week, I think it's going to happen. So that's what I want to see, just some more chemistry and some more deeper throws that stretch the field and get the defense out of the box.
I love all that. I agree with all that. Only last thing to say, Chris, is goodbye from Perfectville.
Later.